pressed the case for the U.S. to share its drone technology, arguing that it would be preferable for Pakistan's pilots to carry out such attacks. Julie McCarthy, NPR News, Islamabad.
Analysts are predicting that a report due out today will show that the Social Security and Medicare trust funds will run out of money sooner than projected a year ago. The worst recession in decades and resulting high unemployment will lead to a bleaker forecast for both Social Security and Medicare in this year's trustees' report. The downturn has resulted in the loss of 5.7 million payrolls since it began in December of 2007 and an unemployment rate that hit a 25-year high of 8.9% in April. Fewer people working means less money paid into the trust fund for Social Security and Medicare. I'm Carl Castle, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse.
Vintage vinyl is coming soon. Bring your used records, CDs, DVDs, and working stereo equipment to our location in the East Wing of Lincoln Square, Urbana, between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. by Wednesday. And mark your calendar for the sale date this Saturday, May 16th. For more information, call Dean Geiken at 217-333-6503.
Support for today's programs comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Saturday from 2 to 6. Information is available at 337-7704 or at thecorkscrew.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. We're also very happy to have back here on the program once again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, she's on the program, and we open up the phones and say, if you have plant questions, you give us a call. Maybe you got a problem, you're not sure what to do about it. You have a particular place in your yard, you're looking for something for that spot, and maybe you're looking for a suggestion. And I think that she can help with that. Any and all of that, we can also take houseplant questions too. 333-9455. We have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. At any point here, if you have questions, you pick up the telephone, give us a call. Well, it's good to see you again. Glad to have you.
Good morning. Great day to talk about gardening. Huh?
Yeah. We're just talking here before we got going. This is about as good. Okay. Now I know. I know there are people who like it cold. There are people who like it hot. Okay, that's fine. But as far as I'm concerned, this is about as good as it gets. And if we're lucky, we'll have a couple weeks. It'll be pretty nice before it gets stinky hot, which I don't like.
You just moved right into that other stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
No, we're just going to enjoy the day. And the plants are loving it. I mean, most of the plants that I've looked at have looked great. We didn't have, for the most part, at least in our areas, we didn't get those late frosts that sometimes we get where things really get hit hard. I was a little surprised I had a lot more winter damage on some roses that I had that I was a little bit surprised. I didn't think that I was going to get quite so much. But other than that, most of it's been, you know, things have grown really well and from what I can tell, really made it through the winter fairly well.
Yeah, and we certainly have not had real hot temperatures for that kind of stress.
Sure.
And we've had plenty of moisture, so everything, and certainly in my yard, everything looks really, really green. And things, you know, generally look pretty healthy. So right at this moment, yeah.
So far, so good.
All right, we've got a couple of callers here ready to go. Vermilion County is the first. Line number one right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Well, there's nothing in my garden except some volunteer dill right now and some chives. Can I keep them going by just cutting them off really low? Will I have to reseed to have dill? And how can I have chives all summer?
Yeah, I assume you probably just have the regular old chives for the most part. They're not, and you want to cut them back. Is that what you said?
I'm just wondering, how do you keep it going so that you can use them later? I mean,
The
chives are already flowering and they're tough. You know, the stems are tough.
Right. And actually, right after they flower, I usually go ahead and do a really severe pruning on them, and then they'll send up new growth. And actually, your chives are pretty tough. If they've been in there, especially for a year or so, then they're pretty tough. And so you can, as you say, the stems get pretty tough or the leaves get pretty tough. So actually cutting them back, and they'll tolerate that very well. So
okay, you do the whole plant, or do you have to just do part of it?
Oh, I just off with their heads. I do the whole plant. So just take some pruners or shears or whatever you have, and I do a pretty heavy prune on them. I probably take them back at least 4 inches or so.
Okay, and the dill, what happens to it?
What happens to it?
I mean, can you cut it back, and will it keep making little tender ferns or not?
Not so much on them. From what I can tell, at least on them, because they're an annual, which is, you know, different. The chives are actually a perennial, so they're used to coming back. Dill, I have not seen that where you can actually do a lot of pruning on them and have them. Usually you have to reseed them or just let them reseed themselves. They come up very easily from seed. And so really you're better off just letting them reseed themselves or just do, you know, do one planting, or if you have volunteers now, and then, you know, wait a couple of weeks and then plant a few more. And so you always have that new stuff coming up, and that's really probably better. There's a new variety, or new-ish variety, that's been out for a few years called Fern Leaf that seems to have a lot more leaves on them. So you get a lot more leaf, you know, per plant, you know, if you're really doing a lot of harvesting. So you may even want to think about one of those varieties as well.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, over to another call. This is Clinton, Indiana, line 4. Hello.
Hello there.
Mm-hmm.
I have some questions related to some rose bushes that I'm trying to take care of on my aunt's property. And the problem is that they're being overwhelmed by some other plants. In one case, there's a bush where there's a mulberry tree that has sprouted in the middle, and I've been trying to cut it back, and I'm trying to figure out what's the best way to get rid of the mulberry tree without damaging the what's left of the rose bush right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the other case, there's what I think it's a honeysuckle plant that is trying to overwhelm an older bush, which I've been told it's sort of an older variety called Seven Sisters, and I'm trying
mm-hmm.
to save that plant.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you've hit upon actually a couple of things. Roses really don't compete well with a lot of other plants, as in stuff shading them. So they will lose with the two plants that you're talking about, the honeysuckle and the mulberry. The roses are going to lose. So you've already figured that part out. What you could do, certainly with the mulberry, I think the other thing you found out is that, unfortunately, with a lot of these weedy trees or weedy shrubs that come up, you can't really just cut them off and then have, they just don't die. They resprout, and I think that you just make them mad and they come back with even greater vengeance. That's my feeling, but, you know, what do I know? So, you know, you've hit upon that. So about the only thing you can do, if you want to try to dig it out, and I know that's hard because you've got the other plant right there, what you could do is what's called a cut surface treatment with an herbicide, and you just you know use it according to label directions, and it's just called cut surface treatment, and where you're actually just cutting the woody stem, the thing you're trying to get rid of, and you very carefully actually put the spray right on, or even dab the spray right on that cut surface. And you just protect the plants that are around it, you know, the plant that's around it. You can put plastic around it or paper down or whatever, but once the spray dries, then you're fine. So,
okay, so
that's fairly effective on mulberries.
Okay, so it's called cut surface treatment.
Right. And it'll be listed on the label as in this is listed for cut surface treatment. And probably what you're going to look at is some of them, the either brush control type products or one of the non-selective herbicides like glyphosate, one of those that's usually listed as a cut surface treatment. So that's fairly effective with that. And then you said the other was a honeysuckle that was coming up? Or was
I think it's some kind of a honeysuckle. It's a very viney plant, and it has had some sort of orangish flowers on the tree that grows nearby. But the rose bush is a few feet from the tree, but some of the vines have somehow seemed they've crept through the ground
mm-hmm.
in the root system, and now they're coming up on the fence, and I've been fighting
mm-hmm.
that trying with this Seven Sisters rose bush.
Right. And this is a woody, the thing you're trying to get rid of is actually a woody plant. It's like a woody vine.
It
has a woody thing.
It's not a real woody vine, at least not the part that's on the tree. It's a very flexible
mm-hmm.
kind of a vine that just kind of winds around the fence. And
mm-hmm. It could certainly be something like Japanese honeysuckle, which is another invasive that can come in and the birds can spread it around and it just kind of comes in on its own. But it's another one of those that you either may want to try and dig it out. If it's close enough, you know, it's far enough away from the plant, you may try and dig it out. And you may have fairly good success with just digging it out. It's not quite as bad as a mulberry. And then, or you could use actually the same kind of treatment that you would use on the mulberry as far as the cut surface treatment. So okay. Probably either one of those would be fine. And just, you know, read and follow the label directions and then protect any plants that you don't want sprayed.
Okay. All right. Thank you very
Good
much.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you very much. Now, see, you always laugh when I say I talk
no.
nicely to my plants
oh.
and tell them how pretty they are. Now, you're talking about mulberries being vengeful.
I know. I'm,
I think you have something of a double standard here. Sandy Mason is our guest.
There's drama out in the garden. You know that?
Tell me about it. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here every month, always on a Tuesday. We talk about lawn and garden care. Questions, welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next, somebody on a cell phone, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I've got a Japanese maple that's about, oh, 4 or 5 years old. Well, probably older than that, probably 7 or 8 years old. And when it first got put in, its lead branch going up, which would be, you know, the trunk branch, got broken off and didn't think much of it. Another branch took over that role and it was fine. And then a couple years later, that got snapped off. And I've been waiting for another limb to just kind of take over that and become the lead branch, and nothing is doing it. So it's not growing in height, but it's growing out horizontally.
Mm-hmm.
And the topmost branch is growing horizontally is also the longest, and it's probably a good 3 feet. And I'm wondering at this point, is there anything I can do to make the thing go vertically?
Mm-hmm. Well, with Japanese maples, now some of the varieties just want to do that, where they kind of do this wide-spreading thing. That's kind of their natural tendency. But if the branch is flexible enough, you actually could stake it for a while, you know, just get a sturdy stake and stake it for a while and see if you can encourage it to take over as the leader. And a lot of times that works with plants and with trees. And you just really have to watch it and make sure, you know, as you stake it and make sure it's not girdling, you know, as you strap it down and make sure it's not girdling at any one time. Sort of keep an eye on it. But a lot of times you can do that. But if it's flexible enough that you can actually get it to stand up like that, or you may have another, you know, even a smaller branch or something where you feel like, well, I could probably, you know, move this one so it's up. So really training them can certainly work on those.
Okay, because the big one, I'm afraid that, you know, it probably would only be flexible about halfway back.
Yeah, it might.
So thick now, it's snapping. I'd sure
yeah.
lose that.
You have another one. Or you end up with a really good dog leg on it. So yeah, you may. I would just really look at maybe some of the other smaller branches, maybe one that's close to the central part as you possibly can, and just start training that up. And it may take a couple of years, but often you can get it that way.
Okay, well, that
okay.
sounds great. Thank
okay,
you.
Good
All
luck.
Right, thank you. We'll go on again to someone in Tazewell County here, line number two. Hello.
Hello there.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Mulberries and honeysuckle can indeed be vengeful. You
cut
them off and they just come back.
Thank you very much.
Oh, listen, and on that cut-stuff treatment, though, I have found that if I use one of those very small sponge paintbrushes, that I
sure.
can get a very specific application and I don't endanger things that are around
yep.
it.
Yep, good idea. Good idea.
Okay.
So that's
yeah.
a good.
Thank
hey,
so
thanks
much.
For the tip.
Very
uh-huh.
good. Thank you. Yeah, Bye. Because you do, and you do indeed, if you use something like Roundup or whatever, you have to be very careful because that will, it's nonspecific. And what you get it on,
right.
if you get enough of it on the plant, it's going to kill the plant.
Right.
So you have to be real careful.
And it doesn't take much. I think that's the big thing with the herbicides is that unless it tells you, you know, that you somehow have to drench the thing, you really don't need so. You just want to wet the surface. So we're not talking about a whole lot. So a sponge applicator would probably work just fine.
Okay.
So good idea.
Back here to Champaign County, line three. Hello.
Hi. I have a couple questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
One is I'm wondering if you could recommend a perennial that I could put as a ground cover for a shaded area below trees and hopefully something that would be low maintenance and kind of short.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, you know, one of them that I like, now I know sometimes in certain areas people kind of feel like it's semi-weedy, but I really like it in shady areas. It's called Allium, or sometimes it's called, which is a horrible name, dead nettle. But just, we'll go with Allium. And it actually is, you can get different ones, but they usually have a silver leaf with maybe a green edge on them. And there's ones called White Nancy. There's also one that has purple flowers, and it may be Purple Nancy, I don't remember. There's Purple dragon, I think. But at any rate, it's a little, it's a ground cover, and it probably gets at most maybe 8 inches tall. But it does have a flower. I like the fact that it's kind of silvery. Really, you know, the problem with a lot of shady areas is the fact that it's just so dark. So if you get dark-leaved stuff, then you don't get a whole lot of interest. So I like these silver-leafed plants. It does spread very nicely from what I have. Now, periodically, it goes a little bit farther than I want, but I just dig up one of them and I stick it somewhere else. So I don't think it's a, I think it's a manageable spread.
And is it something that, gets dense enough that it would, once it gets going, it would prevent other weeds from getting in there?
I would say yes. I mean, it really is, covers very well. And I've just really been impressed with it over the last few years and have just found it. I think if you're in really dry shade, I probably make sure that it gets plenty of moisture at least the first year. But even, you know, once it gets going, it seems to tolerate dry shade even fairly well. So I've been really impressed with it. And I definitely would, you know, look at that and see if that's something that you might consider. And they seem to be pretty tough from what I can tell once they get established.
Okay, great. And the other question I have is, could you recommend some type of an herbicide for getting rid of dandelions and other weeds from a flower, an area that's going to be a flower garden, or a garden for things that you're going to eat, like a vegetable garden? Or is there some way other than pulling them up by hand?
Mm-hmm. So you're just wanting to redo an area and just get rid of all the plants that are in that area so that you can have a flower or vegetable garden?
Yeah.
Is that what I'm understanding?
Weedy right now.
It's pretty weedy right now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It really kind of depends on what kind of weeds. If you have a lot of perennial weeds like dandelions or creeping Charlie or something like that, you're going to have to do something more than just sort of, you know, getting rid of the weeds, which you've kind of figured that out just by hoeing or just removing them, hand removing them. So you may want to think about a couple things. If you've got a little time, you may want to think about just smothering them out, which you certainly could do. And one of the things that I've done is actually using like wet newspapers or wet cardboard, and then you just smother them out, put some compost, wood chips, whatever, kind of just smother the whole thing out. Now, if you're wanting to plant it right away, that may not be the route you want to go, because usually with that, I usually wait. I might do it in the spring and then not plant it till later on in the season, or maybe not plant it till fall. But it's a great way to smother things out. It's just by, you just smother them out.
It doesn't have to be like a month if you're going to do that?
I would. It depends on the weeds you have. If you've got dandelions, it might take a little bit longer. Something that has a really thick root to it might take longer than a month. But I suspect you'd probably get rid of most of things in a month or so. Mm-hmm. And they actually don't remove the mulch and all that kind of stuff. You just plant right into it.
Okay.
And actually, it's a good way because it actually, you know, it adds organic matter. It's actually improving the soil and stuff as well. So if you've got a little bit of time and you don't mind spending a little bit of effort, it actually is a great way to get rid of a lot of things. I've done that with Creeping Charlie. I did it with violets, you know, were just areas where it just seems like I wanted to do something else and I just smothered them out.
Okay.
So that would certainly be one thing. You certainly can look at herbicides if you wanted to use something like one of the non-selective herbicides like Roundups. Glyphosate is the product. You certainly could do that as well. Generally, with something like that, we would spray it. You'd wait a week to 10 days or so, make sure everything is dead, and then go ahead and you can actually plant right into it at that point.
Okay.
So kind of depends on your time frame and kind of your ultimate goal.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, very good. Thank you. And next is somebody in Terre Haute, line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, could you please tell me how I could control or even get rid of English ivy growing all around the side of my house? I just tried everything. I pulled it all up and tried to. At one point, I didn't have any left, and then it just keeps coming back, and I even put Brush Be Gone on that side of the house last year.
And that didn't kill it?
And it's still coming back.
Wow. Maybe the lady that needed the ground cover in the shade could come over to your house.
She could have it all.
It's
been around the house for 40 years, and it just cannot get rid of it, all of it. It just keeps coming. And, of course, it's so invasive, too, and it crawls up your foundation and pulls all the concrete out from between the blocks, and I just really want to clear it out and plant something else. Do you have any thoughts how I can get rid of it?
Well, it sounds like I'm not sure I can tell you much more than what you've been doing, but persistence, obviously, is part of the key. You have to, you know, just wait them out. Uh-huh. one of you is going to win, and you have to be the one.
I have a feeling it's going to be the ivy.
Just go for it. Go for it. So I think you've certainly done just trying to dig it out, obviously. I'm a little surprised the brush be gone. I'm not sure what time of year you used it. Did you use it when the plant was actually actively growing?
Yeah, I used it later in the summer last year because I just try to keep mowing over it. At least that helps some. But
sure.
I don't know. Finally, I thought, I've got to get rid of all this on the north side of my house, and I just have to. So I put the brush begone, thought maybe this year, and it's just coming back up this year.
You might think, I think the one thing, especially with herbicides, is when you apply them can be crucial. Because if the plant isn't actively growing, especially later on in the summer, maybe where it's hot or dry or something like that, herbicides often don't work very well.
Okay.
So it may be in a timing thing. Like, you know, right now a lot of the plants are just very actively growing. And, you know, with that active growth, sometimes you can get better success with some of the herbicides. So I'm not sure I'd give up on that completely if you want to go that route. I think the best thing, you know, what you've been doing, trying to dig it out as best you can. But every time it raises its head, you know, you need to take care of it. So don't let it get another foothold, which it sounds like what you're doing. But I think it's going to be persistence. I'm not sure there's any other kinds of things that are going to help you too much. But I think those kind of things are going to help. But I would consider, you know, a reapplication maybe of the herbicide and see if that doesn't do better for you this time.
Okay.
This time
I hate to use the toxic chemicals, but you just get to a point where you can't take it anymore.
Well, and you need to use it judiciously. And obviously, you know, reading the label and follow the label directions on whatever quantity it says as far as what chemical to use and how much to use and, what, you know, those kind of things. And, you know, that kind of an application and making sure you protect any plants that you want to keep. I think there's, you know, ways that it can be done safely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right.
Good luck.
Very good. On to Savoy. Next caller. Line one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Two questions about mowing the lawn. We had somebody do it, and it looked tan after it got done. Like, maybe is that a sign that the blade is too dull? The edge.
Yeah.
The tips of the leaves were all turned kind of brown. The tips.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes that is absolutely what, because if it's not, the blade isn't sharp, it just sort of tears it, and that's a great place for, and usually that just goes ahead and dies. So you kind of get this overcast kind of look of brown or beige, and that kind of sounds like, and usually you can just look at the grass blade and you can see it should be a clean cut. So maybe they just didn't, you know.
And
go
then
ahead.
A more serious problem on it, they mow, it was looking so lush and had grown so a little taller than usual, and then they mowed it really short. And I remember you said kind of a proportion of don't take too much off, or sometimes it grows a lot. I'd like to advise them what proportion, like, and we have always had it done it ourselves and kept it long enough that there was shade for the roots and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so could you give me any numerals on that? Our percentages?
Yeah, usually we say don't remove more than a third of the leaf blade at any one mowing.
Okay.
So, you know, depending on how tall it gets, hopefully, you know, I know it's really tough this time of year to, you know, keep it mowed down. Yeah. And, you know, thinking that you're not going to mow it down, usually we say 2 inches is probably as low as you ever want to go anyway.
Oh, okay.
So,
that's what I needed to know.
Yeah, 2 inches. Now, when we get into July or August where it's hotter, drier, you might actually go to 2.5 and have it a little bit longer during stressful periods. But this time of year when it's growing well, 2 inches is great. And I really wouldn't mow it because it's a pretty good figuring a pretty good proportion between the leaf blade and the roots. So if you don't have much of a leaf blade, you don't have much in the way of roots.
And then
plus, as you say, if you take too much at any one mowing, you know, what they found is actually the leaf blade, it just kind of quits growing.
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of sits there and stalls, which is not what you want. You know, this time of year is not such a big deal, but certainly when we get into July and August and stuff, that can be tough.
We should have a good rain tonight, I guess, and then that should level it off and start over again. Thanks
so,
very much.
Okay, well, good luck.
All right. Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she's here once a month, always on a Tuesday, to talk about lawn and garden care. So whatever questions you might have, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, I want something here I want to give you a chance to talk about, and we were talking about this before we got going here, that for people who do a lot of gardening, one of the things that you end up with in your basement, in your shed, wherever, is a lot of plastic pots from plants.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's possible that you might if you start things from seed or, you know, you do things, you might find some use for these things. But my experience is that you end up with a ton of these and there's really nothing to do with them. And I have had the frustrating experience before of trying to go to places where I bought the plants and said, well, will you take the pots back? And they said, no. Mm-hmm. And for good reason, because they really have to clean them. You don't want, if there's any possibility there might be some disease or some sort of problem in the pot, well, you don't want to put another mm-hmm. plant in there. So for mm-hmm. them, it's a big nuisance. Now, though, here, ladies and gentlemen, if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, there's an opportunity to recycle pots. And it's coming up. It's going to be a couple of weeks, but I'm sure if people have them piled up, they'd appreciate the opportunity to do something more responsible than just tossing them in the trash.
Right. I think that's the one thing, and it's something I've always felt guilty about. And I always, you know, we keep these pots and we always think we're going to reuse them. Or sometimes we get people will call up our extension office and say, can you use these pots? Well, you know, we don't really have big uses for them anyway. The garden centers have to have consistency in the sizes of the pots. And mm-hmm. I think that's the other problem that we've seen over the horticulture industry. There's all kinds of, they may all be 4-inch pots, but some of them are taller than others, and it affects how they get watered. And so you can't have this hodgepodge if you're nursery. You can't have all these hodgepodge of pots. It just doesn't work. So it's real hard for them to take them back. And as you said, the disease problem. So what can you do? There are certain areas that are doing recycling pots now. I know even in the Bloomington area, too, I think they're also having some recycled pots. So if you're in the McLean County, Bloomington area, you may want to check with your extension office up there. We're doing ours on Saturday, June 6th. It's going to run from 9 to 1. And we're going to do this at Illini FS Farmtown, which is 1309 East University Avenue in Urbana, 1509. I have to get my glasses out. 1509 East University in Urbana. And that's so Saturday, June 6th. And so we do ask that people sort them. So you really need to look on the bottom side of the pot generally. It'll be marked with a 2, 5, or a 6 with that triangle, that recycled triangle symbol. And that's really what we want, 2, 5, or 6. So depending on what it is, as long as it's some kind of garden pot, we're going to take them. So it's really going to be a great opportunity. Maybe you got to clear out your garage, your shed, or whatever, and get these things recycled. And these will actually be chewed up and then reused and actually made into pots again. So you may end up with them back again. But it closes the loop. We're not getting rid of them. But also, I would tell people that, you know, check with your waste hauler. You know, some of them will, if they are recyclable pots and they have that symbol on them, some waste haulers will take them, the 2, 5, and 6. But you may want to check with them first. Not all of them will do that, and not of them feel like they can handle those. So check with your waste hauler too. But Saturday, June 6th, the recycling day for plastic garden pots. Be there.
Very good. And that's at the Illini FS, the Farmtown store. It's on East University. I'm sure a lot of people know that place. I go there to buy plants. A lot of people go there to buy plants and other kinds of garden stuff. And so Saturday, June 6th. And probably it would be nice for people to kind of wash them out so that they don't end up with a lot of dirt in them and stuff like that.
Yeah, just any kind of loose soil. You don't have to do a lot of stuff. But any kind of loose soil, if they're a metal, you know, if you have like hanging baskets and they have, you know, metal hangers on them, it'd be good to take those off. I should also say that we do have a couple sites that are going to be sort of pre-event drop-off sites. Actually, Prairie Gardens, Shura Nursery in St. Joe is also doing that. So, and also Danville Gardens, their Champaign location on Prospect Avenue. So those three places in Champaign and St. Joe will actually do, you can drop them off ahead of time if you aren't going to be able to make it on June 6th.
Great. Okay. We have some other folks here with questions, so we'll get back to the phones. And line one, someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Mm-hmm. Okay, so my son got some, or they gave him some sunflower seeds to plant. So we went and we got the little starter things where they have the soil and the little pot. So we stuck it in there with those things are up already. Mm-hmm. So now what do we do? They really are big. I mean, they're at least 3 or 4 inches.
Them
we just planted them like last Thursday or something.
So. Sunflowers are actually great ones for kids to plant because it's a big seed, easy to plant. You usually have great success with them. So get them outside.
Okay.
Probably the best thing, though. So they're inside right now? Or?
Yes, we have them inside. We've been watering them every, you know, day and night, just keeping them moist, the soil moist.
Okay. I would go ahead and get them outside, but I will tell you that if plants that have been inside and then we immediately put them outside, they really are supposed to have like a 2-week sort of hardening off period,
oh, okay.
kind have a halfway house.
Okay.
But sometimes at this point, we get late in the season. Sometimes what I've done is actually gone ahead and planted them out there. I don't know how many of these things you have, but then gone ahead and, like, taken plastic milk jugs and, like, cut out the bottom of them. And so you sort of protect them that way until they sort of get used to the fact that there's wind out there, or there's more sun and all those kind of things. So they have to get kind of used to that. Okay. And usually you only have to do that for a week or so. But so I will tell you, you may want to protect them just a little bit before you just sort of send them on their way.
And what's the best place? Where's the best place?
Are these really big ones?
Some, you know, that's what we don't have no clue because they were just given to him.
Well,
I mean, you know what? They look like the usual ones you usually stick in your mouth and eat.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
There may be about, I don't know, half an inch at most in length. Okay. I mean, probably 3/8 would be.
Yeah. I'm guessing it's probably one of the big sunflowers. And those can really get tall, easily 5 to 6 feet, if not more.
Okay.
So they're big. they need full sun. So someplace kind of like back of the border or next to a fence or something like that usually works out really well.
Okay.
So that'll be great.
Yeah, and keep them.
I'll enjoy them.
And try and protect them from the wind and rain. Apparently there's storms tomorrow, so maybe wait.
The wind is going to be the big issue for them, and usually it doesn't kill them, but it just, the leaves
so
really
if
get torn up.
We do kind of keep them inside. How long, I mean, if so maybe at most, how long do we want to keep them in the little pots?
I would, if they're getting...
They're already like 3 or 4 inches now.
You really need to get them outside.
Just get them outside.
Or at least, you may have to pot them into a bigger pot, give them more sun, those kind of things. So it depends on how much effort you want to put into them.
They really need that to keep growing then. Okay.
Yeah. You don't want to keep them in a little tiny pot for a long period of time.
Okay, so another question to kind of show you how little we know about gardening. So my mother-in-law gave me a flowering almond, and we planted it on the north side, but it maybe it was 3 years ago, and it's gotten so huge. It probably has got up to about 5 feet, maybe, or four, maybe 4 feet, and branched out, and it's died. So the big part. Now, there's some suckers coming up from the ground, but we don't know what caused it. It just kind of withered up, and it was beautiful the last, two or three years that we had it in there. And we've never really done much to it, just watered it, kept it, But we were so surprised when that happened. And so now what do? Do we tear it out now?
Well, if you have some suckers coming up and that's where you want to keep it there, I would just go ahead and cut off the dead stuff. Those things are pretty tough.
Are they?
In the long run. But I will tell you, I think over the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of plants. And I'm saying it's probably has a whole lot to do with how wet things have been. And so for a lot of plants, especially in the wintertime, if they're really wet, then they get some root rot problems, some stem rot problems. And we certainly have seen that over the, how wet it was last year. We certainly have plenty of moisture this year. So I think a lot of plants have sort of succumbed to some of this just too much water kind of thing. And that wouldn't surprise me with the flowering almond if that was the case. But it sounds like it's, trying to recover. I cut off the dead stuff and try to shape it a little bit and go for it.
Okay.
She'll never know.
And the suckers, do we take them somewhere else? What we just planted it there because we thought, we'll just stick it there. And it did fine. But I'm wondering now, should we have put it somewhere else?
Well, it sounds like it might be too big for that spot.
Okay.
They're kind of big for right next to the house, depending on a bigger house.
So maybe put them away?
Yeah, you might find it's better to sort of put it farther away if you have, along a fence or kind of a border area that borders your property.
Uh-huh.
You'd probably have a little better success with it.
And
to be honest with you.
Full sun, it doesn't
full
really
sun.
Matter.
Full sun. Okay.
Oh, full sun is good.
Yep.
Okay.
Full sun's good.
Great, thanks.
Good luck.
Right, thank you. We'll keep on going here. Next caller up is somebody also in Champaign, line number 2. Hello.
Hey, good to hear you. This has been a good show so far. I really enjoyed it. First, two quick points. One is that some plants are vengeful. I've been doing battle.
See, David?
I've been doing battle with Creeping Charlie, and
is
a losing one.
Creeping
and
Charlie,
I think with your idea of the newspaper and the mulch, I can at least create a detente around my garden so that they don't that it doesn't
absolutely.
Get
absolutely. So, I'm with you.
That's what I'm looking for. The second thing is about, you were talking about recycling, and I had kind of a slap your forehead moment at my favorite garden center just a couple weeks ago. I tend to buy a few plants, put them in the ground, then the next week I'll buy some more, put them in the ground. So I kept bringing home these black plastic trays that they always give you when you're buying your plants.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me, gee, what if I brought it back?
The trays?
A second time and a third time. I don't have to keep getting new trays. And I happened to mention it to the cashier, and she said, oh, that would be a good idea. Because people are always looking for the trays.
Yeah.
So there's an idea for folks that they want to, you know, do a little bit more recycling. That's just one simple idea that came across. You can have one tray for the entire summer unless you're buying all your plants at one time.
Right, right. But that's great. That's a great idea because we all end up with all these trays. And I would think that might be even one of those things. Well, depending on if they're molded and, you know, have the, you know, specific holes for specific pots. Some of those that have no, you know, kind of indentations in them, you know, a lot of, I would think a lot of the garden centers might take those back because they're easier to
especially
use.
Especially if they're,
good point.
If they're just, especially if they're the, you know, right at the cash registers where they're simply used
sure.
as transportation
sure.
devices. I didn't talk to a manager at the garden center, but the cashier certainly said, yeah, if you bring it in, we'll put it on a stack and then the next customer will go ahead and be able to use it. So just one little idea, and sometimes
good idea.
Little ideas that add up to make big change.
Yeah, absolutely. So, good idea.
Right.
I'm like,
I'm
thinking, like, why didn't I think of that?
Really?
Why didn't I think?
You are the garden goddess, aren't
I'm
you?
I know these things.
Oh, man.
But that's a great idea. That's how we get better.
Okay, very good.
I can be taught.
15 minutes. Well, yeah, sometimes. And what I really like was the guy said, the show's been really good so far. Like, from this point, it's going to right downhill. Yeah, we're not really quite sure. Pretty good so far. Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month. We do these shows on a Tuesday. We talk about lawn and garden care. I have questions about plants.
We try to keep it going.
Yeah, we try. We'll see how we can do from here on out. I'm not promising anything. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Sycamore is the next caller. Line number 4. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a natural area in my backyard that we keep unmowed for the first half of the summer. So the original woodland plants that were there before the yard was carved out of the woods that we got can survive.
Mm-hmm.
We have Trillium, we have Jack in the Pulpit, wild geraniums, and lots of other interesting things there. And then when July comes, we cut it all down, rake it up, and mow it as grass the rest of the summer. It's been quite successful until a few years ago a tree came down in that area that kept it shady.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's sunny part of the day, and we're starting to get a proliferation of dandelions in that area since I won't spray herbicides on
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there is any other easy way to keep the... I'm afraid the dandelions are going to take it all over. What do you think?
So I think the one thing with dandelions, at least looking at them even in woodland kinds of areas where there's plenty of dandelions around, you know, they don't take shade all that terribly well. I mean, compared to the other stuff. I guess walking around in the woods, as I have, you find them along the trail. Beyond that, you don't see them too much sort of taking over the woodland areas. So if you're concerned about them sort of taking over these woodland, is that kind of the idea, or you just
well, the
you
problem
really don't
is
want
them there? The problem is in this immediate area, it now is it has got partial sun
right.
where it didn't before. It was shaded all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And short of planting another full-size tree, which I can't do, the area is now going to be sunny part of the day, several hours during the day from now on. And it's been like that for three summers now. And I think that's why the dandelions have started to proliferate in that area, because it's now sunnier than it used to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And although the woodland plants seem to be doing fine.
Yeah, I think what you find with especially some of those woodland plants are really more savanna-type plants. They actually will take more open areas and maybe take a little bit more sun than you think. I guess what I wonder is what you might want to do if you want to think about maybe, you know, in that area, if you're thinking you want it more into woodland plants, which it sounds like it is, you know, maybe you want to think about growing some things that are along those lines, like American bellflower would be one. Blue lobelia, those are, you know, native plants that really take, you know, sun, shade. They do fine in those. So you might actually do a little bit of research and maybe find some of those savanna-type species that kind of like that sun, shade, you know, kind of thing.
Well, we're happy with the mix that's there. We're just afraid that the dandelions are going to crowd them all out.
As I said, they're going to hang out in the area that they are right now. But from what I can tell, you know, walking around in the woodlands and stuff, I don't worry too much about dandelion in woodland areas. They generally just I don't see them clear into the woods.
Well, that's
where the
problem
and stuff
here
is
this area isn't shaded anymore.
Right, you're going to have them in that spot, absolutely.
And will they take it over?
they'll take over the sunny area.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Okay.
And that's, you know, is there any easy way to get rid of them or other than digging them out by hand?
Digging them out or herbicides or smothering.
Smothering?
Yeah, which you certainly could try because I mean, I seem to be on a smothering kick today. I don't know. But actually, you know, using, you know, as I mentioned before, either I've used wet newspapers, wet cardboard.
Black
and then
plastic.
You certainly could use black plastic, but you want to go that route. Again, you have to, you know, leave it there for a while. You're going to have to leave it there for a few months. And it usually does a pretty good job of smothering stuff out. Now, obviously, it's going to smother out anything else that's around there. So I don't know if you have any other good stuff still there. It's certainly going to smother that out, too. So, you know, whether you want to go that route or not. But I just haven't seen Dan, you know, as far as taking over the rest of the woodlands, I'm not sure I worry about it too much. They just don't seem to do that.
Well,
I'd be more concerned about garlic mustard and some of the other weedy kinds of things that we have come into those areas.
Yeah, that we haven't had much of a problem with in that immediate area.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the dandelions are getting more and more of them.
Well, you may just decide you want to go ahead and do that for now, and then go ahead and, you know, smother them out, do everyone whatever you want to do with dandelions. And then, but then as long as you have an open area where there's no plants there, you're going to get weeds coming in. It just, yeah. Nature abhors a vacuum, and so you're going to have stuff come in. So either, and that's why I thought you might want to go with like American bellflower or some of the other native things that do take sunny areas and would help to sort of fill in that soil area so you don't have open soil where dandelions and other weeds can take over.
Well, there never really was any open soil. It was always planted with a good cover it had grass sown into it, and shaded a shade grass mixture, but we left all the woodland plants there, and they seem to have done quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
They're
mm-hmm.
not having any trouble at all. The only thing is now that there's more sun in that area, the dandelions are starting
right.
to crowd
sure.
things.
Sure.
And
sure.
we're just afraid eventually it'll be all dandelions and nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's our main concern. All right. Well, thanks
okay.
very much.
Okay.
Thank
Good luck.
You.
Bye now.
Let's go to the next caller here. And they're in Downs, line number 3. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you that the McLean County Master Gardeners, together with a bunch of other people, Ecology Action Center, I can't remember all of them, has a large plastic pot recycling project. And a number of the nurseries in the Bloomington-Normal area have collection points. There are also other collection points. If you call the McLean County Extension Office, they can give you a list. But we will take everything.
Great.
And
Thanks.
They're all being recycled. The neat thing is that the Occupational Development Center has given us space to use. They have a lot of space. And in return, the Master Gardeners are helping their clients do some gardening.
Oh, great.
Which they've been very excited about. So
everybody wins. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, good.
It's a big project, and we've gotten a lot of notice for it, and it seems to be working very, very well. So if people are in the close to the Bloomington Normal area, they can find out where to take their plastic pots.
Great. Thanks for the info.
Yeah, thanks very much. Well, and one could hope that you will start to see more and more of this, because I'm sure that everybody's got the same problem. They don't know what to do with the pots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next caller here is in Belgium, line 1. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you both. I have a question and observation, and then I have a bit of a request, if it's at all possible. The observation is, you know, I have peach trees I talk to you regularly about, and this year I had like 2 blossoms on like 15 trees. Has other people noticed that? I think it was froze out in February with a little warm period, and then it turned back real cold. And we didn't have any peach blossoms at all this year. And other people noticed that?
I had one other person that did call and was real surprised that they, again, didn't have anything in the way of the blossoms. The blossoms didn't even come out.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, so they had the same kind of situation. So I wonder about that, too, as far as... you know, earlier they just plain old got froze out and then didn't even develop.
And
so,
and the request. Now, this is going to be a little odd. In England, it's fairly prevalent, and I don't know if here in the United States it's prevalent, but I think there's a shrubby tree that's called laburnum, that people plant in gardens and stuff. Now, this plant, when it grows, it usually outstrips its garden after a while, and people will cut them down. And the wood from that tree happens to be a very beautiful, dark chocolate brown. Hmm. And I use them for turning, because I do a lot of wood turning also, not as a business, but as a hobby. And do you know of anybody that, well, of course, you'd have to know what the tree is and stuff, wouldn't you?
I mean, I've heard of the tree.
Yes.
I just don't know how prevalent it is around here. I just don't know that much about it, to tell you the truth.
If anybody ever has one that wants cut out, I'd be more than glad to cut it out and carry it away. And turn it into something pretty.
That's always good to know.
And give somebody one of them that I turn just for the wood.
Oh, nice.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Well, bye-bye. Thank you very much for the call. Again, we're coming down to the point where maybe we have 5-6 minutes left with Sandy Mason. We'll try to get in as many callers as we can. And we have a couple here who are still holding on. Next person in line is in Cutler, Indiana. Line number 2. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Sandy. Quick question. What? Is it too late in the season to try to transplant peonies?
Well, normally with peonies, we say only do it in September. So you're actually too early.
Okay.
Or too late, depending on how you want to think of it. So it's September. Peonies are really kind of funny, and I've actually tried to do it in the spring because I thought, oh, I don't know if they know what they're talking about. But they seem to – they do okay if you transplant and divide them in the spring, but they don't seem to – for some reason, for whatever reason, the hormonal thing, I imagine, they just don't seem to send up new shoots. And so they sort of hang out. They don't produce much in the way of roots. And then they seem to die later on the season. So there seems to be something about that particular plant that you have better success in September. Now, if you have to move them for some reason, you might want to go ahead and move them, but I wouldn't do a lot of dividing this time of year.
Okay.
I'd only do it if I had to.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. And next, line number 3, back here in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. My question is similar to the guy with the woodland plants and the grass.
Mm-hmm.
Does it work to let grass just reseed itself? I have a little patch where it doesn't matter. Nobody walks there. Nobody ever sees it. And, that's where the sandbox was, something. So it's been sort of problematic, and I'm kind of tired of trying to seed it, and I wondered if I just let what grass is there reseed itself. Would that work? Does it take a whole season for it to do that?
Yeah, I assume this is like Kentucky bluegrass or typical.
Who knows? I've read many things there.
Who knows? Yeah. Yeah, I know that feeling.
Well, whatever is growing there likes it.
Yeah, and that's fine. And I wouldn't plan on that. It certainly, there's no reason why you have to necessarily mow it. But don't count on it actually reseeding itself. Actually, in our area, we don't see a whole lot of that going on necessarily.
It won't, even if you let it go the whole season, it won't mature and drop seed?
Generally, the Kentucky bluegrass, no.
Yeah.
I mean, they just generally don't do that, to be honest with you. So I wouldn't count on that. There certainly would be other grasses that might go ahead and reseed themselves, but that would not be one.
But if they did, it would take a whole season. I mean, if you let it go, they start to develop seed right away, but does it take a whole season for it to mature and drop off?
Yeah, and whether the seed's viable is the other thing. Sometimes they go ahead and flower and do the whole thing, but the seed actually isn't viable and it never germinates.
Gotcha.
And that's generally what happens with Kentucky bluegrass. Yeah. We just don't see that kind of thing normally going on. But Kentucky bluegrass certainly grows out, by rhizomes and stolon, so it's spreading, on its own even without seeds, which a lot of the grasses do too.
Right.
So
okay.
It really kind of depends along those lines. But
don't really need the seed.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. Gotcha. Thank you.
All right. And again, to a caller here at Woodridge, line number 1. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a comment and then a question. First comment is about my peach trees. I have some rural property in Iroquois County, and I noticed that for the first time in 10 years that we don't have any peach blossoms either.
That's interesting.
There were absolutely none this year, so that was surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for that comment. I'm actually going to have to do a little check-in with the local U of I specialists and see if they've seen that same thing. So that's sounds like we're seeing a long spread of areas here that are having the same problem.
On the other hand, we have had just tremendous apple blossoms this year.
Oh,
the
great.
Apple trees are just really, really full. They look so beautiful. They were really beautiful a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question has to do with apple trees and spraying of them. If I don't spray my apple trees, we'll get webworms, and certainly the Japanese beetle will attack them. But also, the bugs in the fruit and whatnot. And I'm wondering, can you talk a little bit about what a minimal type of spraying program could be for apple trees?
Well, probably in our area, one of the biggest things is codling moth, and that's the notorious sort of worm in the apple kind of thing, the little caterpillar. Yeah. And codling moth is probably one of our bigger problems. Apple scab is one of the fungal diseases, might be an issue. Powdery mildew might be an issue. So there's a few disease issues, but probably codling moth, I would say, is probably the one, because that would, you know, you have a really pretty looking apple, but then you've got this hole or, you know, tunnel where the caterpillar used to be, and then sometimes you'll get some disease or whatever, it kind of rots from there. So, and they don't store very well. So probably codling moth is probably one of the big things. The nice thing is there are some chemicals out there now, some organic type of chemicals that actually do pretty good with codling moth. And but it makes the tree look really funny, I will tell you. It's sold as Surround, I think is one of the names, but it's kale and clay. It's actually a clay product that you spray on. So it makes your trees look like they have this kind of white dusting on them. So it looks kind of funky. But if you don't mind that so much, it actually makes this layer, you know, kind of over the apple, and then they don't lay their eggs on them. So, and actually it's pretty good, pretty effective for them.
Does that decrease the sunlight in the leaves?
They really haven't found that to be a problem, to be honest with you. It seems like it's thin enough. It's just, there's enough of the stuff there that it keeps the moth from actually laying her eggs. And it may be, maybe she just can't detect the trees as easily or the fruits as easily. There may be some detection kinds of things going on there, but it doesn't seem to be an issue. And it's not something you have to worry about. You just kind of wipe it off and, you know, clean it off before you eat that. So it's kind of a neat idea. It's just the fact that people can get over the way it looks.
And you start spraying that when?
Probably now. I'd have to really check, but I imagine once you start, I shouldn't say now, but once you start getting small apples on it, usually that's about the time we need to start thinking about it. But I'd really have to check to be sure. But if you buy the product, it would tell you that kind of thing. But kale and clay, it's K-A-O-L-I-N, I think, is actually the product, clay. And then I think Surround is one of the names or one of the brand names that it's sold. But I'd do a little checking on that, and I'd have to do a little bit more to find out exactly when that should be sprayed. You certainly can give me a call at the extension office. It's 217-333-7672. And if you can't find the information about when to spray them, there should be an indication. Usually it says it's so many days after full bloom or something like that, it'll tell you to start spraying.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. And I'm sure that extension, I'm sure that you have publications about growing fruit and what kind of things are recommended. So if people are looking for good basic information, I'm sure that you have that.
And I think the whole thing with apples is you have to decide on, you know, if you want that perfect apple with no blemishes, it takes a lot to get that. Certainly in our area, because we have a lot of disease pressures. We have a lot of insect pressures. Other parts of the country, they can do that much easier than we can. So trying to grow them organically is more of a challenge here. And so then you have to decide, you know, do I really need a perfect apple anyway. So,
Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension Champaign County. She's here once a month on a Tuesday to take your questions. She'll be back again next month. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate it. WILO programs are made possible with support from Lincoln Square in Urbana, a lifestyle center which includes independently owned specialty shops, including Art Mart and Art Mart Toys. We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for public telecommunication thanks to a generous gift from Robert and Alice Campbell. Some more talk about gardening coming up later today. Britain is often described as a nation of gardeners. This passion for gardening began to take hold in the 18th century. Andrea Wolf says that it was a garden revolution that actually began in America. Coming up today on the Afternoon Magazine, she will talk with Celeste Quinn, exploring this horticultural history with the author of the book, The Brother Gardeners, Botany, Empire, and the Birth of an Obsession. That's in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine today. Celeste Quinn is the host. Show gets underway at noon. Coming up in the next hour of this program, we'll be talking about General Motors, its problems, and how perhaps the government might help. Our guest for the show will be a business journalist. His name is William Holstein, and he's author of a recently published book, Why GM Matters. That's up in the next hour. First, though, we will take a break, as we usually do, so we can bring you an update on the markets and news, so please stay tuned.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets. Let's go right out to the pits. in Kansas City. July wheat at 633 down one. September 643 and a quarter down one. At the Chicago Board of Trade, May wheat 582 and a quarter up one and three quarters. July 589 down one and three quarters. September 614 and three quarters down two and a quarter. May corn 421 and three quarters up eight and a quarter. July 429 and a half up eight and a quarter. September 438 up eight and a half. December 448 and three quarters up eight and a half. March of 2010 458 and three quarters up eight. June crude oil 58.52 up 2 cents. June ethanol 171 up 1 9/10. June RBOB 165 7/10 down 2 2/10. May beans 11.29 1/4 down 3 quarters. July 11.12 1/4 down 3 3/4. August